From Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College.
This is.
This is.
This is.
This is War News Radio.
For War News Radio at Swarthmore College, I'm Eriko Shrestha. This week, we interviewed Rola Mutter, a graduate of Al-Azhar University, and Christopher Guinness, a spokesperson from the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine, or UNRWA, to learn about life in Gaza. We often fail to monitor the aftermath of large-scale conflicts and forget that in some areas, conflict is constant. When media coverage of distant places reaches us only when the death toll is high, these places become reduced to a place of death, and Gaza is no exception. The strife between Israel and Palestine is a broad brush that colors our perception of the disputed area, but there is far more than just fighting happening on the ground. This is the first of a three-part series that will report on life in Gaza. This piece will focus on the Gazans' unrelenting commitment to education, despite the many restrictions that they face due to the blockade imposed by Israel and Egypt. This week, we have Lisa Kato reporting.
The Gaza Strip and the Palestinian territory have undergone many tumultuous periods before reaching its current state in the conflict. The current government, the Palestine Authority, was formed in 1994 following the Oslo Accords ratified between PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, and Israel. But in 2006, Hamas, the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, which currently controls the Gaza Strip, won a large majority in the Palestinian parliament, defeating the PLO-affiliated Fatah party. There are conflicting theories about when the blockade between Israel, Egypt, and Palestine started, with some sources stating that it began after Hamas took control of Gaza, and others stressing travel had been restricted since the First Intifada in the 90s. The blockade by Egypt and Israel, which restricts the flow of goods and people in air, sea, and land, is a tight chokehold on Palestinians. However, the Jerusalem Post also argues that until Hamas, recognized as a terrorist group by many national entities, uses its resources for humanitarian development, lifting the blockade will only increase security risks. But in spite of, or perhaps because of, the perpetual violence and the blockade that restricts many aspects of their lives, Palestinians have made constant efforts to develop education policies that will lead them to open new doors.
If people are stateless and they don't have governments to provide these things, then they have no choice but to become much more self-reliant and resilient and provide these things themselves.
While data in these areas are often called to question in terms of their legitimacy, according to the Palestine Human Development Report, as of 2015, the literate population in Gaza is 97%. The literate population is the same as Singapore, a country that has a GDP that is almost 20 times Palestine's. The result of Gaza's high literacy rate is due to high enrollment rates in academic institutions from a young age, with 97% of children completing primary school. These statistics show the often underreported facet of the life of Palestinians. The Palestinian people are not just victims of their situation or perpetrators of violence. They are people who are passionate about education and are striving to receive better education to make a better life for themselves. To find out more, I interviewed Rola, a graduate of Al-Azhar University, who spoke to me about the central role that schooling plays in their lives.
There are students at the university who are married and pregnant at the same time. And you will find girls at university who are married and have kids. Palestinians, actually, it's a way for them to survive.
Gender gaps in school enrollment are narrowing yearly. And while there is still a large gender gap for labor force participation, that too is slowly decreasing. Chris Gallagher from UNRWA echoed Rola's opinion when he spoke of the reason why Palestine has such a progressive education system.
Just traditionally, Palestinians have prized education and innovation in a way which other populations in the Middle East don't necessarily. So the Palestinians, if you look at their record on gender equality in education, for example, you know, we achieved that in UNRWA by the late 50s, the early 60s, which was light years ahead of comparable, you know, government education systems. So Palestinians do have a reputation already, which is a long historical thing.
The critical conditions created by the blockade have formed a population that is passionate about education, But underfunding and the conflict between Israel is a constant barrier preventing many youths from receiving and moving forward with their newly founded knowledge. Public schools are often overcrowded with approximately 50 students per class, limiting the attention students receive. Short class hours as a result of institutions working to cycle students in and out of class has truncated their learning hours. These systemic issues resulted in 80% of students failing mathematics in an examination in 2006. Thus, while private schools pose a financial hardship on many families with a tuition that is almost twice the average monthly income, many opt to send their children to private institutions for the small class sizes and the attention they receive from the administration. The conflict with Israel also prevents students from attending school. According to a publication by United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine, 302 schools built by UNRWA in Gaza have been directly affected. There are reports that Israel is purposely bombing UN schools, which are often used as shelters, while there are also reports that Hamas is using these schools to store and fire weapons. Families undergo many hardships to send their children to academic institutions in order to provide a foundation for a brighter future. But even after students complete their education, the youth face multiple obstacles in finding employment in and out of Gaza. Here is Mr. Guinness from the UNRWA.
52% of Gaza are children, and somewhere around 60+% are youth. The combination of huge potential and creativity, coupled with very, very few opportunities, is going to lead to inordinate amounts of frustration. And, you know, this is exacerbated by the blockade. I mean, if you're in Gaza and you're a young person, think what you've got to look forward to. You know, massive unemployment. There's about 60% unemployment amongst youth in Gaza.
But educated Gazans are projected to increase, as higher education has actually become more accessible, but not because they are providing aid or lower tuition. According to Al Monitor's publication in 2015, Palestinian university admission rates are increasing due to the economic hardship that these academic institutions are facing themselves. By increasing the number of students and thus increasing income, universities have raked in more funds to support themselves. The job market is now overflowing with qualified students with degrees on their hands. Yet still, the job market has not increased. The high unemployment rate has many educated young Gazans aspiring to leave Gaza to pursue a better life. However, the Rafah border, the only passage through Egypt and Gaza, rarely opens. It opened for the first time since 2 months in February in 2016. According to Al Jazeera, more than 25,000 people registered to leave to Egypt, and only 756 people were allowed passage. Christopher Guinness of UNRWA offered more insight into the difficulties of transportation in and out of the Gaza Strip.
Because of the restrictions, they basically cannot leave Gaza. Some do. I mean, some people have managed to get through Rafah, which is the big crossing point in the south of Gaza, into Egypt. And they then make it through to Cairo and other places, and they get out and they can get an education. But Rafah is very, very difficult and is often closed. And if you exit from Rafah, you have to go back through Rafah. So you run the risk of exiting and never being allowed back or finding it very difficult to get back. And then in recent months or years, certainly, there are all these radical extremist groups who have been very active in the Sinai Peninsula. So even if you do manage to get out as a young person through Rafah, then you have serious security risks crossing the Sinai Peninsula and getting to Cairo and then flying on. And then the other option to leave is through Erez, which is the checkpoint in the north of Gaza, which is controlled by the Israeli authorities. And they simply really, it's very hard for people to get out to be educated or to go out and work, or to do what young people want to do. I mean, many people prevented from going on, even Fulbright scholars and people who are really, you know, bright and have got a future ahead of them.
So while brain drain will not be occurring anytime soon in Gaza, there's an atmosphere of hopelessness amongst the youth. Here's Rola, the recent graduate from Al-Azhar University, again.
It is really hard that you live under threats from even Israel and from your government. This is really killing us. you know, this is really killing us. So people who are open-minded, people who are think of a better future will not stay here, because it is this kind of situation has no solution, and things is getting worse and worse and worse by time. You will find people who are open-minded, who have the ability, who have good skills, who are engaged in the community, really, really deep, who want to live a better life. They will, for sure, try their best to get out from Gaza.
Many youths are entrepreneurial and innovative with a passion for education. Many still see education as a way out and invest money and time to learn. But this can only go on for so long. If the growing population of youths are continuously suffocated by the blockade, the youth might sooner or later find violence, not innovation and education, as a solution to their hopelessness. While the blockade isolating the 1.8 million Gazans living behind the walls and checkpoints is potentially the root of domestic issues in Palestine, efforts to address them may serve as a catalyst to propel change from this current stalemate.
Gaza gets lots of attention, and all the spotlights are there to record the Israeli attack and the rockets flying out and, you know, all of that. What journalists are less good at doing is keeping an eye on Gaza when the guns have fallen silent.
That brings an end to our first piece on Gaza. Once again, this podcast was brought to you by Lisa Kato. Our behind-the-scenes crew this week includes Amber Sheh, Sabrina Merrill, Salima Borgiba, and myself, Erica Shrestha. For more information, check out our website at warnewsradio.org. Until next time, thanks for listening.